is Jared and the GM on ESPN 102.5, the game. We will get to your calls on the Astros and the cheating in just a second, because I do want to get to that. But the Predators won both games against the champs, including one at home, where they have really struggled, especially on Saturday night. Now, this was Sunday night, not Saturday night, but still, on the weekends, they have really struggled. By the way, I did tweet this out. I do appreciate this take of mine that I'm going to amplify. Those Winter Classic jerseys are fresh, and I love when the Predators wear them. I love the Predators Winter Classic jerseys, the ones they wore last night,
right,
as much as I hate the light blue pants the Titans wear. I hate those light blue pants. The Titans were 0-4 in those pants this year. The Predators play pretty well in their Winter Classic jerseys. I'm just saying, so there's that. I do want to get to Joe Rexroad's take in The Athletic, in which we said going into the weekend that we thought the weekend was important for the Predators. We thought the week was important for the Predators. We called it Judgment Week. They finished 3-1. But we also didn't say that the weekend was going to blow our socks off one way or the other, right? Like, what you already thought about the Predators, one weekend was not going to just blow your socks off and, you know, totally make you think, oh, you know what, this team may have to sell at the deadline, and then turn around and say, they're going to win the cup. Like, we weren't going to do that. And I think you and I have both not done that. Fair to say?
Fair.
Joe Rexroad, quote, there are times in this job when the right... when the thing right in front of you will dictate how you analyze a larger issue, which is maybe just a way to make a particular day more interesting, but that's how Sunday afternoon was unfolding for me in Bridgestone Arena. Now, stop right there. Joe basically saying if there's a larger issue, sometimes you'll take the one thing in front of you and you'll make that one thing in front of you kind of define a larger topic, which is essentially how Stephen A. Smith operates. So I don't really love the NBA, but First Take will be on at the gym. And the bottom of the screen will say something like, 76ers beat the Bucks 112-110. Did the 76ers prove they're for real with their win last night? Well, how the hell is one random basketball game going to tell us whether or not a team can compete for an NBA championship? But that is what that show does. That is literally that show. That show is the show of, is Lamar Jackson better than Patrick Mahomes? That's what that show does. And that's what Joe says sometimes you end up doing, which is what Joe did. So Joe continues to write, quote, win for a second straight day over the defending champion St. Louis Blues and for a third straight game for the first time since October, and that settles it. The Nashville Predators should go for it. Forget the idea of trading away a Mikhail Granlund or a Craig Smith. You're right on the cusp of playoff position now. Get in and see if you can make a run. But to lose to the Blues, Joe writes, to continue home woes that have become the norm, to fail for an eighth time in a row, to turn two wins in a row into three, to demonstrate for the countless teenth time that you can't be trusted, bag it, sell away. What do we think of Joe Rexroad saying that he says they should buy and try to make a run with this group now that they've won these two games? But if they had lost the two games, then they should have sold away. What do we think of that line of thinking?
I don't agree with it, but that's me. I mean, there's another, how many games have we played? 50 some odd?
Yes.
So, you know, I look at some of 56. Those other games. 56. I'm looking at the other.
Excuse me, 58.
58 games. And I think I have to look at that, you know, in total. And it's not, you're not looking for, well, what was the score of the Toronto game? And what, you know, why did we win or lose that? Well, no, I'm not talking about that. I think you look at it and you say, okay, what kind of team is this? You know, can we sustain? Who's really been playing well throughout the season? Is there somebody that's getting better? Who's getting worse? And I think you use all of those things to analyze it. And like I said before, now I think it's getting to the point where there's even more than that, because now we're getting a little bit tighter with the cap, and that has to be an issue. Now we've got some players that maybe we would like to trade. You got to look at that. You've got some players that that are expensive and you're not going to be able to trade, and you've got to work them into the program. You got to look at that. I think you got to look at all those things. And that's why it's so difficult. And that's why, in my mind, I can't just look at a couple of wins or losses and say, okay, we're That's made the decision for me.
If it was 10 in a row like the Tampa Bay Lightning have, that would be one thing. But it's not 10 in a row. And I'm not trying to take away from the wins over St. Louis. Those were some big games, and you needed them. Because you could not, we said, you could not dip into 7 points out of a playoff spot, 9 points out of a playoff spot. You couldn't dip yourself into that. Now you're 1 point out of a playoff spot. But that doesn't really change my theory. I mean, when Craig Smith had his hat trick on Thursday night, I thought, yes, go, baby, go. Turn that into a first-round pick. I haven't changed my thought on that. Not to say that I don't think if the Predators get great goaltending or get hot that they couldn't make a run in the playoffs. I just don't think it's incredibly dependent on Craig Smith or Mikhail Granlund. And if it becomes dependent on Craig Smith or Mikhail Granlund, I don't think you're going to get past a team like Colorado. I'm not sure you would get past a team like the Blues. Now, it gives me hope that if they run into the Blues in the first round, that they could beat them because they've, you know, swept them on two back-to-backs, or I guess two, like, weekend sets. I think there was a day in between the earlier time in October that they swept them. But I'm with you. Like, I'm not – I am closer to not wanting to trade Craig Smith and Mikhail Granlund because of how they played, but I'm also not willing to say that I'm not ready to trade those guys either. I'm glad they won. They showed some real chutzpah, as my people would say. They showed some real chutzpah over the weekend. I liked it. They played hard. They played tough. They played together. Rene stole a game, which is always nice to see. But I'm not, you lose, sell. You win, go. Yeah. I don't even think you can get that way about a team in football when that happens, and there's only 16 games in a season for that.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I mean, the truth is you could go out here these next couple of games and lose them all. You know, then where are you? Right back where you were. Okay. So, you know, is that the one you want to make the playoffs with? Or you could get on a run here and win your 10 or 12 in a row, or, you know, you win 10 out of 12, or you win 12 out of 14, whatever it is. You know, a nice run. And now you're right in the middle of the playoff run, and so, you know, you wanted to sell? I don't know. It's too. If none of the games that were, you know, it's funny because when you start the season, you're not worried about what you're going to do in February, you know, and then you get to February and you're not worried about what you did in
October.
Yeah. You know, well, they all count, you know, one way or another, they all count, and I think the ability to be consistent through all those things is the only way you got a chance to survive it.
My theory is with a lot of these things are that the individual games, you watch them, so you invest your time in them, so you get passionate one way or another about it, and yet one game can't define your season, won't define your season, and a general manager is too smart than to let one game be the determining factor. Now, there are probably deadlines where it's like, if we're not at this point, then I got to make this decision. But I highly doubt that it is, oh, we beat the Blues twice, so now let's go all in.
Well, they and you know, let's face it, that's what fans do. You know, you win a game or you win a couple of games against a good team, I'm really excited. Okay. I mean, we had
somebody
text in or somebody called and said, yeah, we're on our way to the Super Bowl. I mean, on our way to the Stanley Cup. Okay. Yeah. I mean, we got a ways to go yet, but that's what fans do. Or, you know, we can't win a game. This is the worst ever. It's what fans do.
Well, remember after the Texan game when the Titans played the Texans in December and that was a showdown game and the Titans lost and I was like, you know, I was distraught. And you said, I'm not crying in my beer over this. And I'm like, I am. You know, now you got to get the Steelers to lose a game and you got to win and you got all this. You know, every team that mattered lost.
Yeah,
the Titans
didn't have to win a single game.
Didn't have to win a single game and would have made the playoffs. Could have lost their last three and ended up in the AFC title game. That's, you know, and that's football where there's 16 games. So I can't, like, to me, that is, you know, I joke around. I really do like Joe Rexroad, and I think he's a good writer. I give him a hard time. I call him Bad Take Joe. That's a hot take. Hot Take Joe on that one. 615-737-1025. I did promise to your calls on the Astros, so let's do it. Todd is up next on the Astros cheating. What's up, Todd?
Hey, guys. How are y'all? Enjoy the show.
Good.
Hey, boy, especially when I get your take, of course, Jared, I'm interested in yours, too. 97-98 Broncos. I mean, how many times do we see the highlight of Elway holding the Super Bowl trophy and everybody praising John Elway, goes out a champion, win? NFL owners, people around the NFL know that if they hadn't have violated the salary cap those 2 years, they probably weren't holding that trophy at the end of the year. I really think there's a double standard here, and I think the NFL got away with one. Floyd, I may be putting too much emphasis on that, but I thought that was a pretty big deal.
When
the Broncos violated the salary cap in 98-99.
And how did they violate the salary cap?
They went way over. They lost a third-round draft pick and had to pay, $1 million to the NFL. They lost a third-round draft pick both years they won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I don't even remember that.
I vaguely remember something about that.
I was a GM, too.
I think you would have been on top of that.
Yeah,
if that was
if that was a big deal, really scary, really substantial, I'd have known all about that.
Like, if you were a GM in baseball, even when you turn 71 years old, you probably won't forget about how the Astros cheated.
Yeah, I mean, I think that... I mean, it seems.
I do remember something vaguely about the Broncos and the cap, or something like that.
Yeah, but I think that was contracts that they stuck in their desk, wasn't it? I think that's what that was.
I'm literally Googling right now Broncos cap avoidance.
Yeah, see with
because I wonder what comes. I remember like seeing something on the bottom of the screen at some point a long time ago, like a long, long, long time ago, like back when you got your updates. Nothing even really comes up. Like, as I put it in there, like, nothing comes up about it. It's not the same. If we can't remember it, the specifics of it, I think Spygate would be the closest thing to this. And even then, I thought that was a little overblown. And Bill still got docked with a first-round pick, and the Patriots got in a lot of trouble. And if there had been any proof that they had used it for the Super Bowl, I'm sure they would have gotten that Super Bowl taken away.
Only because... they were told not to do it, and they did it anyway. Mm-hmm. That's the only reason they got punished. Because everybody was doing it up to that point in time.
Brady got 4 games for something they didn't even prove.
Yeah, I mean, everybody was doing it, and then all of a sudden, they said, okay, no more of this. And they went to the Jets or wherever it was and did it and got caught. And that's where that whole thing stemmed from.
Back to your Preds calls and your Preds text. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Plus, I know I give Joe Rexroad a hard time, but he does bring up a little interesting nugget in the same column that we just discussed. I want to discuss that next. It's Jared and the GM live from the wholesaling studio powered by RumbleOn.com. It's ESPN 1025 The Game and streaming on the Game Nashville app.
That's not a bad weekend, I suppose. What do you think here?
Yeah, huge, huge 2 wins in a row against one of the top teams in the league. Just a gutsy effort tonight. Obviously 2 timely goals, and we played solid defensively and just got it done. But all in all, you look at where we're at. I think these last 3 games have really given us confidence and kind of see the light now, and so. Helps us for sure.
That was Becca last night. 2 huge wins. I don't think anyone disagrees with that. But reading Joe Rexroad's column in The Athletic, Floyd, how about this little nugget? Quote, 28-22-7 entering Sunday compared with a 2016-17 team that went on to the Stanley Cup final run that changed everything around here. Rexroad writes, the answer? That team was 27-22-8 at the same point after a 5-2 loss at Minnesota on February 18th, 2017. So that team was 27-22-8. This team 28-22-7. So technically, this team is better than that team entering Sunday. Then he continues to write, by the way, according to Joe, Mikael Granlund had a power play goal that won that game for Minnesota. Anywho, Joe continues to write, clinging to the last playoff spot in the Western Conference. 1 game worse than this one, surrounded by discontent and uncertainty, though both of those things rise in tandem with expectations and payroll, which is why things seem so much worse than 3 years later. Pecorine was asked if he believed that this team actually has a better record than that team did. Quote, no, I would not. It feels different. So what do we make of that? The fact that this team is technically ahead of the pace of the team that went to the Cup final. Do we? Does that give us hope about this season, or do we ignore that as just some little random stat that, wow, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's just a random stat. You know, it's meaningless. You don't know. You're not talking about the same team. You're not talking about the same quality of play. You're not talking about the same opponents. You're not talking about the same league. You know, you're not talking about how many good teams were there in the league then, how many are in the league now. And, you know, I think it's just completely different.
I will say this. I think it proves Laviolette's point that he made on his way out the door, which is that when you win, the expectations become higher. And when the expectations become higher, the discontent raises at a different level.
Sure.
And, you know, I don't think anybody ever considered that 2017 team at any point in that year. I don't think anyone ever thought that Laviolette was in danger of losing his job. And yet they have the same record now. Like, that, maybe the expectations were so high for this team, and the payroll was high, and the veterans, you know, there were a lot of veterans on this team, and so on and so forth, that's why Laviolette was shown the door. I have a hard time wrapping my head around the fact that this team is technically better than that team in terms of record at that point in the year, only because even though that team drove us absolutely bananas until the last month of the season, I never got as mad at them as I have at this team.
Well, you never, I mean, we didn't start off the season saying, you know, win the Stanley Cup. Here we go. We're on our way.
That team did have high expectations after that PK Subban trade, though.
Yeah, but I didn't.
I mean, they got to the second round, game seven against San Jose.
This one and the last one here have been from day one, you know. What's your objective? To win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, now I think they can.
And
back then
it was kind of, you know, we make the playoffs and see where we can go if we make the playoffs. And, you know, I mean, it just wasn't the same.
I just think it highlights how much 2017 was a lightning in a bottle. Harry Zollner, Chuck Pontus, Aberg, Colin Wilson, Colton Sissons with a hat trick.
What did I say? And this is Gaudreau. The same thing the Titans are going to go through next year.
You can be 30% better and not make it as far.
Yes, because what are the chances of you playing Baltimore again and beating Baltimore the way you beat Baltimore? You know, what are the chances of you? And I think you go through and you look at the games and you go, yeah. I mean, they played a great game. Now, if you were to play them nine more times, what would happen? And I think you realize that, okay, that was our day. And thank God it was. You know, but that doesn't mean you're going to have that day if you play them next year in the playoffs.
I mean, I'm going to be honest with you guys for next season. I'm going to have a hard time in November. I don't want to say I'm going to have a hard time caring, because I'm going to watch the games. And when you watch the games, you invest yourself into the game. So when you lose, you get upset. And when you win, you get happy. I'm going to have a hard time looking at results from a macro level in November and having an opinion one way or another. Because if there's anything that we've learned over the last 5 years with this team, it is that, boy, it really doesn't. Until this point in the season, it really doesn't. I mean, it just doesn't.
I know.
You know what I mean?
But we've said that about the last 3 years.
I know, but now we know.
I mean, yeah, but we say that at the same time every year. We say the same thing. And yet when it's November and you're playing good, you're, yeah, all right. And then if you're playing bad, it's, oh, my God, what are we going to do? So it'll be that way. I mean, that's part of the fun of the sport.
I mean, I almost want to say, like, don't even look at the standings until the Titan season is over. Like, don't even look at it. I've always said this about baseball, which is the first month of the year. I'm a huge Braves fan, right? So I watch every game, every night. I go home after this show during the summer, and unless I got something I'm doing, I'm watching the game. I do not look at the standings until Memorial Day. That's when I start to decide, okay, like, you're in second place, and that's all I care about is first place in the division by Memorial Day. And I don't care about the wild card until July 4th. And so I don't worry about if you're in the wild card, out the wild card, none of that matters until July 4th. And then there's the trade deadline, and then the last 2 months of the baseball season, you're pretty much looking at it every day. That's how I feel. I'm wondering if I should look at hockey the same way. That if, you know, don't come to me until like January 15th and say, okay, where is your team right now? And if your team is in the gutter, then you need to be sellers. If your team is at the top, then that's good, but you need to make sure that you get hot at the right time. And if your team is in that little purgatory space that the Predators currently occupy, then get excited because the last month and a half should be a fun run one way or another. Those games then, like the March games, will matter. But I am really struggling with that, with this team. And even last year's team, they had 100 points and won the division last year, and not one person in the entire city was happy about that.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a big deal. I mean, it was a big deal, but it wasn't a big deal. You know, it was kind of like, okay. And we did it right at the end. You know, it wasn't like we were ahead for 2 months and we just skated across the finish. I mean, it was the last game or two they pulled it out. But that's kind of what we expected. Okay, let's go. Now we're in the playoffs. Let's see where we end up.
So what do we make of it being almost a similar record as 2017? I think the series, like the little intricacies of the playoffs play a role in this too, which is you beat Chicago in game one, a game like last night, and I go back, I'm talking about the 2017 series against Chicago. You beat them the way you won last night's game, which was you got a fluky goal and Pekka locked them up.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, and I reflect back to our, you know, Super Bowl year. Well, your first round, what'd you do? You shut out your nemesis. What did we do? We scored on a throwback pass return. I mean, you never, ever see it again. You know, and then you kept going. You find another way the next weekend. And then all of a sudden you're, wow, how did we do that? So, I mean, I let's face it. Most of the time, if you're not absolutely clear-cut the best team in your sport, that year, then you need some of that. Mm-hmm. Every team that goes through needs that. And if you hit one of those days you don't have it, then you go home.
Let's take your phone call. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. 615-737-1025. Calls and texts. We'll get your Preds thoughts next. Jared and the GM, our big, long, commercial-free segment is next, so don't go anywhere. It's ESPN 1025 The Game.
Sundqvist got knocked down by Forsberg. The puck still free, given out to Turris. Turris, stick heavy, he scores! Kyle Turris scores with 2:12 to go! It's 2-1 Nashville! They didn't give up on that play.
Great work tonight, and I know that you're getting a little different assignments under John Hines. It looks like that confidence of Kyle Turris is roaring here.
Yeah, no, I'm just trying to take advantage of the opportunity he's giving me, and I'm thankful for that opportunity, and just having a lot of fun trying to take advantage of it.
That was Kyle Turris last night. If there was a champion of the coaching change, it would be Kyle Turris or Mikhail Granlund. But those two guys are playing out of their rear ends since they've changed the coach. People would say Craig Smith. I think Craig Smith is always streaky. You know, when Craig Smith is on, it's always like 7 goals in 13 games. And that's how he gets to 20 goals every year, is by scoring, you know, 8 goals in 11 games.
I'll say this, he's smoking now. Wow, he's hot.
Although that kills me, because then that means that when it comes time for the playoffs, when you really need Craig Smith, he's going to be back to Craig Smith. Not that I'm kidding. He'll be back to Craig Smith. Texter into the text line, and I think this is an interesting question. If a team offers a first-round pick for Granlund and his agent comes to you with an extension that works for you, do you take the pick or do you lock him up?
I think that all depends on what your decision is. As GM, you're talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think if you're selling, you are thrilled.
If someone calls you for a first round pick?
Yeah. And if you're buying, you're just standing pat, you're thrilled. Because it's a win-win for you.
Texter to the text line says, I agree with you, Jared. I love the Winter Classic jerseys too, but I believe last night was the last time the Predators will wear the Winter Classic jerseys this season. Let me make an appeal that the Predators, if they get into the playoffs and it does become good luck, or they need a little good luck, they should pull out the Winter Classic jerseys. Michael says, to clarify, they still need to sell Turris and maybe Granlin. The optimism for me is making the playoffs because I haven't expected them to make the playoffs for weeks. Doesn't that kind of cut Hines' legs out from under him, though, if he's come in and Turris and Smith and Granlin have played so much better since the coaching change, and then you turn around and you flip all those guys, and now Hines has to rely on Duchesne and the guys that you would think that you would rely on, doesn't that kind of cut the legs out of what Hines is trying to create if you flip the guys that
Absolutely.
Are playing well under him?
Yes, it does. That's what I said. I mean, that's all part of this decision. I mean, I think this trade deadline's a little bit different than what we've seen in the past, just because of things like that. You know, you're at a point now where your third line, that is now the first line, is playing the best, okay, where you're willing to trade the third line, but you're going to keep the first line and the second line, who have not been playing as well as we'd hoped. Well, I mean, what does that do to the coach? Now he's got to try to coach up those other guys and, you know, get them to play like a true first line, second line.
That being said, though, the coach was brought in here to get those guys to play well. It wasn't when David Poile hired him, it wasn't, we need to get the most out of Rocco Grimaldi. It was about Arvidsson. It was about Johansson. It was about Duchesne. It was about Forsberg.
Getting the good guys to play good.
And even though they played hard, all those guys play hard. Forsberg sacrificed his body, got in a fight over the weekend, made a great play to set Turris up for that goal that won the game last night. Duchesne had a goal. Arvidsson had a goal. Johansson made maybe the play of his season, keeping that puck out of the net on Saturday. Even though they're playing hard and they're making some plays, it's not the kind of production that we need out of those guys if the Predators are going to do what people think they're capable of doing. And I'm thrilled for all these other guys, Granlins and Turris's and all that. You're not winning the Stanley Cup because of Craig Smith. No offense to Craig Smith. You're not going to win the Cup. He's not going to carry you to a Stanley Cup. We all saw 3 years ago when Evgeny Malkin and Sidney Crosby decided to carry their team to the Stanley Cup. That's the kind of player that can do it. Those guys are not Sidney Crosby. Let's go to Matt, who's up next here on Jared and the GM. What's up, Matt?
Hey, I was just wanting to chime in a little bit. I mean, we're all so excited about this Predators team because of the roster. And, you know, we're obviously we've been upset. This player hasn't performed. This player hasn't performed. But, you know, we have the talent to be incredible. And it's really depressing to think about buying or selling. I mean, how can we make it better than this? You know, and hopefully they all come out and show it for the rest of the season. I really hope so. And for the GM, I wanted to ask, what do you think the score would be if the Titans had to play Baltimore the next week after we beat them?
That's actually a really good question. Thank you for your call. It's a little off topic, but I'm going to let it fly because I actually do want to know the answer. Do you think the Titans would beat the Ravens if they played a week after they beat them?
Oh, I don't know. They played them like 2 or 3 times in a row.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'd be tough.
I think if it was a 7-game series, I think the Titans would win. Only because of the coaching. I mean, Dean, that... Now, I mean, once Dean throws that out there, then Baltimore gets a whole, you know, they get to go over what Dean did the first time. Now, you get to go over what they did, too, but... I think the Titans would have beaten them in a 7-game series.
They had a game plan going against a team, specific team, that you can probably use once. And it worked. Well, whatever you go to in the next game plan is not going to be near as good as that one was. So that's where I think you get in trouble. And pretty soon you get to a point where you're saying, none of this is working. Let's just go back and do our regular stuff. Okay, fine. Now you're right. They got you right where they want you.
Now it becomes basketball where it's just, okay, who's got better players?
Yeah.
Oh, you do? Okay, you win. Let's go to John, who's up next. What's up, John?
Hey, Jared, I was going to mention to you that hockey's a little strange in their ways they count their wins and losses. 500 will get you into the playoffs most years. At 41, 31, and 10. Give you 92 points, and most years 90 or better get you in.
I mean, that is really, like, 94 is usually the cutoff, so that puts you right on the cusp.
Yep.
So I appreciate your call. I mean, I said this last week, and I stand by it. the bar for me with this team this year is to make the playoffs. It is not like, can this team compete for a Stanley Cup? I mean, if they get into the playoffs, you hope that they can catch lightning in a bottle. The goalies can play their rear ends off, or whichever goalie Hines chooses to go with. I think he's going to go with Saros. So can Saros play his butt off for the playoffs and carry you to the cup? I mean, we've seen stranger things happen. I watched Washington essentially sell apart their team, go down 2-0 to Columbus in the first round, and I thought Barry Trotz was going to get fired like right after that series. If they could fire a coach in the middle of a playoff series, that would have been the number one time it would have happened. Trotz makes the move and go back to Braden Holtby, and they end up winning the Stanley Cup. So it's a crazy sport, I mean, in terms of trying to figure out what exactly is going to happen. But again, the goal for me is making the playoffs. And I just want to stress to people right now that even though the Predators had a great weekend and they have games in hand, which has always been a selling point for this team, they're still out of the playoffs right now.
You think it's amazing how many games we have in hand for how long?
Yeah, like when does this run out? Does everybody like stop for forever. A week and you just play
yeah.
games?
And we played 56 games. We still got, what, three, four games in hand? Amazing.
Now, here's the other thing that people have got to realize about the games in hand. And that is that, yes, you've got a lot of games in hand on Arizona. They've got 21 games left. You've got 24. So you've got three games in hand on Arizona.
There you go. I mean, that's crazy.
But Minnesota is 4 points back of you. You're on even footing with them. Winnipeg, you've got two games in hand. You're even with them in the standings. So you still have games in hand, but if you don't win those games in hand, then it'll catch up to you real quick.
Sure.
Let's go to Nate, who's up next on David Poile and John Hines. What's up, Nate?
Hey, guys. This question is more for Floyd to see what he thinks. From what I remember, GMs take some coaches' input. With firing a guy and hiring a different guy in the middle of the season, with the success that the Preds have had as of late, how much input would you take from the new coach when the trade deadline approaches?
You know, that's a great question. That really is. I would guess this, that he's got to listen. Now, whether or not he actually takes it is going to be something else, but he has got to listen. Here's the hard part when in a situation like this. The coach is coming in to him, and I'm sure they meet every day, you know, every other day, periodically. So they're in constant communication. And the coach is selling. You know what? Turris is just getting better. This guy is getting better and better. And Smith is going to have a career season, and it's only the beginning of a whole series of career seasons. And you know, Grantland, he's going to be the best, on and on and on. Then you get to the guys that you're, you know, paying a lot of money to, and they're saying, oh, man, he just doesn't want to do what I want to do, and, you know, on and on and on. And so what happens is it even makes it more difficult for you. If you've got in your mind, okay, we're going to sell, and I'm going to sell these three guys because their value is never going to be higher. Well, like we said before, you kind of cut the legs out from underneath the coach, because the coach just got through telling you, hey, these are the best three guys I've got. And the opposite of that is true too. You know, where you say, okay, if we're going to get rid of anybody, let's get rid of this guy. And David says, well, you know, man, he's one of our better players. We can't get rid of him. Plus, if we do get rid of him, we're going to have to eat part of the contract and, you know, all kinds of reasons. So I would imagine it could be very, very difficult. Now, David, and I don't know the new coach that well, but David appears to me to be one of those guys that is just the best listener, the best, you know, will sit down and talk about anything and really try to work out a solution to make everybody happy. But I'm not sure what that solution is here.
I mean, he's not going to leave Hines out to dry.
It's going to be hard.
Like, he will, like, I'm convinced that he will not leave Hines out to dry. He'll rather just try to hope that things catch with Granlin or Smith and keep him here as opposed to getting the pick if that means that it helps Hines out. You know what I mean? Like, he's sure not going to set Hines up to fail. I cannot imagine that he would set him up to fail. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Back to your calls, back to your texts. But coming up next, so something that really bothers me, and, well, there's a Tua Tagovailoa take that is supported by an anonymous source. And there's something about the entire thing that bothers me, and I can't believe that it's true, and we'll get to that coming up next. It's Jared and the GM on ESPN 102.5 The Game, and we're streaming on the Game Nashville app.
If he does get passed in terms of medical, and the Bengals are sitting there and say, you know what, we can live a year without him, or maybe we get a half a year out of him, but moving forward, you think there's any shot that Tua goes ahead of Burrow?
I would say there's always a chance. I mean, I've learned in this business for 40 years.
Baker and Kyler.
I'm just spitballing.
I would say it's a 90% chance. If that's the case, and there's no way you're going to know 100%, and nobody can say, I guarantee you Tua's never having another injury. We've had significant injuries now with Tua. Multiple. Three. That's not one. It's not two. It's three. So I would say no to your question. That right. Burrow, because of how he played, people talk about his frame, but they said the same thing about Eli Manning, and he was the Iron Man of quarterbacks. I don't care about people saying one guy has the body to hold up. The NFL allows you to hold up now. It's doing the best it can to have quarterbacks hold up. Now, as I said, Eli, everybody wondered about.
That was Mel Kiper Jr. on the ESPN First Draft podcast talking about Todd McShay, and Mel Kiper talking about Tua. Now, Floyd, I think it's crazy just from watching Tua play quarterback and watching Burrow play quarterback this year to think that Burrow is not the better quarterback. I think Burrow is easily the better quarterback, but I also thought Matt Leinart was a great college quarterback, so what do I know? But there's a take in the Peter King Football Morning in America column that surrounds Tua that really bothers me to my core.
Okay.
Now, you heard Mel talk about that right there and says Tua's not just an injury risk because of the hip. What about the ankles and everything else that Tua's hurt over the last couple of years? Without even talking to your medical people, and I know if you were GM, you would talk to your medical people and you would want Tua evaluated. And Tua would be an injury risk in your opinion. Fair?
He would be an injury risk just off of the last injury alone.
So, I mean, there's no doubt about it that he's an injury risk.
Well, it would be for us.
So this is what bothers me, is that, like, I get criticized for having really strong opinions, right? Like, people love to cold take me. People, what do you think now, Stillman? Like, people love to do that. Or people get mad at me just because I maybe say what everybody's thinking, but I just say it a little bit louder than the average person would say it. Peter King, who nobody ever gets on for his opinions, wrote this in the Football Morning in America column that I think is a hot take. Quote, I asked a longtime NFL team physician recently if he was worried about a 13-month span in which Tagovailoa suffered two high ankle sprains and a significant hip injury and had ankle and hip surgery. Without examining the records or the player, this doctor said because all three injuries were contact injuries and all three would be the kind of injuries that are probably not chronic, he probably would not red flag Tagovailoa as an injury risk. That's one doctor who would tell his team, if you want the guy to stay healthy, design an offense that doesn't put him in harm's way as much as he was at Alabama. That's a hot take. For a couple of reasons. Number one, is there an offense that's better at protecting the quarterback than Alabama's offense? You got the best lineman in the league, the best receivers in the SEC, a running game. You're always winning. Like, the Alabama quarterback should never get hurt. Yeah. Secondly, just because the injuries are contact injuries doesn't mean that the guy doesn't have an injury history. Where do we get that? Where does this team doctor come away with the idea of, well, Tua's hip injury was a contact injury, so it's not as bad as, say, like a torn ACL, which is a knockout. I don't believe that. I cannot believe that a long time, and I'm not saying Peter King's lying about this. I am not. But how in the world could an NFL team doctor, again, who doesn't have to go on the record with his or her name, not say that Tua is an injury risk without evaluating.
No, I have no clue. I mean, I think it'd be impossible. When I hear things like this, I don't ever, you know, they're meaningless to me. Because there's, you know, no names, no who. I would say this. I would be willing to bet just about anything that you could not find a legitimate team doctor that would give you an opinion, give an opinion to a newspaper guy on one of the top prospects in the country. I mean, that would be everywhere. And he would be sued if he gave that opinion and they put his name to it, and Tua dropped six spots in the draft because of it, dropped to 11, that guy would be sued for his entire practice. I mean, those things just don't happen.
Although Dr. Now, David Chow does opine on injuries publicly, and no one's ever sued him.
Well, I don't know who that is. Who is that?
He's like the pro football injury doc. He used to be the team doctor of the Chargers, and now he's not the team doctor of the Chargers.
Because he got sued?
I don't think he got sued.
I don't know.
But he's not the team doctor of the Chargers anymore, so now he'll look at, like, video of somebody getting hurt, and then he will have an opinion on what that injury is.
Well, yeah, I mean, anybody can look at a thing and say, yeah, he hurt his knee. Or he hurt his back, or he hurt his ankle. I mean,
no, he looks at it and says, like, okay, you can tell because the bone didn't move that it's not a tear of this, but it is a sprain of the this,
yeah,
and that's a 4 to 7 week injury.
I'll say this. Most of the time, I mean, the only way I could see you getting a team doctor to say anything, if this guy's legitimate, a legitimate NFL team doctor, is if you said, okay, and you just gave him the injuries. What would you think of anybody that had this kind of a pelvis injury, that had this kind of an ankle injury, that had this kind of a, forget the name, forget the position, forget just a football player with those injuries? Then you might get him to say, yeah, you know, I would have to say he's an injury risk, or he's not an injury risk, whatever he would say. But other than that, I mean, I have never met anybody that would be willing to opine on a college draftable player as to what you think his injury history is going to be, because that would literally cost you your practice. I mean, you would be sued to high heaven.
Well, the guy's never going to put his name on it, or else he's not going to be an NFL team doctor
anymore.
That's
what I'm saying. So if you're not going to put your name on it, then to me it could be anybody.
And not to say that Peter King made it up, but Peter King could just as easily make that up. I mean, Tua can't not be an injury risk. He is 100. See, this is my thing. I am not in love with Tua in this draft for a handful of reasons. But everybody's looking at the draft. Todd McShay is trying to make the argument that Tua, if he's healthy, is a better prospect than Burrow. I just don't believe
that. Who's doing that?
Todd McShay. I just don't believe that. The second thing is, and I think it's funny because someone said, well, look at the receivers Burrow had at LSU, and look at the team Burrow had at LSU, and I'm thinking, oh, and the receivers Tua had, man, they're just so lousy. Yeah, Jerry Jeudy, they're just so bad. Like, stop.
The receivers on those two teams are better than half the receivers in the league.
Oh, yeah, like, it's ridiculous. And then the other side of it is Tua is always hurt, and Tua, I just am not in love with Tua. Like, I'm not in love with him, the player. Forget the injuries. I'm not in love with that. But now I'm staking my whole franchise on a guy who played two seasons in college and got hurt three times over the two seasons, and I'm putting my entire franchise on that guy's back. The only team that I would say, okay, you can do this, is the Chargers, because they got to sell tickets. But Tua wouldn't even be able to play right away. But the Chargers, because they have to sell tickets, okay. But there's like talk that Miami would have to move up from 5 and trade with Detroit at 3 in order to get up and draft Tua. And I think that is ridiculous. I mean, what is it? 50% usually are your odds that a first round quarterback hits somewhere, 50,
no.
30,
yeah.
You know, something like that.
Drop it.
Yeah. So it's a 30% chance. And I have to give up assets in order to go from 5 to 3 in order to take Tua. I don't think Tua's that good. And he's an injury risk.
Well, it's the same deal. It just takes, you know, one team. I mean, we see this is Mahomes, you know. I mean, Kansas City.
Brent Veach fell in love with him, and there you go.
I remember when they made that trade. Everybody was going, what could they be doing?
We thought it was for Watson.
What could they be doing? And they jumped up there to get Mahomes, which turned out to be stroke of genius.
But do you think Tua is that good?
I don't know. I mean, I've never seen him play that much.
You watch every Alabama game.
Oh, yeah, but he didn't play in every Alabama game.
He played most of them.
He was hurt. When did he get hurt? Halfway through the season?
No, he got hurt like around Thanksgiving. So that's the very end of the season.
I don't know. But he's, I mean, that's between the ankles and the knees and the everything else. I mean, he'd scare me.
We'll get some opinions on Tua because tomorrow we are talking about this at much greater length. But I just don't think he's that good.
Like, well, I don't worry about his. If he's healthy, I don't worry about the ability to throw the ball and do those things. You're worried about that?
I mean, I just don't think he's that special.
He's pretty good now about throwing the ball. And remember Gary Danielson. Gary loved him.
A lot of people throw good balls, especially when they got those receivers.
Gary loved him. And I respect Gary's opinion because not only did he play the position for 15 years,
but played for he, you.
Huh?
He played for you?
No, but he is one of those analytical kind of guys. Not he doesn't like him because, you know, he dresses well. He likes him because he's what he can do on the field.
Now, he did compare Joe Burrow to Tom Brady. So there is that. And I love Gary, too. But, I mean, that's a little bit of a hot take. Yeah. No, Gary compared Joe Burrow to Brady.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. He was the one that started all of that. And then everyone's like, whoa, that's ridiculous. I actually think, this is going to sound crazy, I think that Tannehill is a good comp for Joe Burrow. Athletic, runs, willing to take hits, nice size, not great size, you know, good arm, but not the best arm, but just solid all-around leader, puts the team in the right spots, is athletic, can run around more than you think. Like, I think Tannehill is a decent comp for Joe Burrow. That's just my opinion. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. 615-737-1025. Pekka Rinne shut down the Blues last night. What did that tell us about Pekka? We'll discuss next. Jared and the GM, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're streaming on the Game Nashville app.